Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
Joining us now on the Issaquah Pest Control Hotline, it is ESPN senior NHL writer Greg Wyshynski. Greg, how are you?
I'm doing great. It's exciting times. I went on the cap tracking website today and saw Seattle Kraken logo and $0 as the payroll, and I got very excited. It all seems very real right now.
Greg, we are fired up. We got all sorts of money to spend, man.
Yeah, and everybody in the league knows it. So Ron Francis's phone must be ringing 24/7. He must have had that thing, you know, under several pillows and a mattress at night, or else it's going to keep vibrating.
So, Greg, who, by the way, if you guys are like casual hockey fans and looking to get more involved now that we've got the Kraken, you should subscribe to Greg's podcast. He's co-host of the Puck Soup podcast. Greg, I want to start with your Q&A kind of interview with new Kraken head coach Dave Hakstol before we jump into our questions about the expansion draft. So we just kind of got to learn more about Dave. We didn't know a ton about him before. He came on to interview with us, seemed really excited about the opportunity to be with an expansion team, an expansion franchise, although it's got to be a unique situation. I mean, what did he say about just the weirdness of joining a team with no players yet?
Yeah, I mean, it's much different than his first gig with the Philadelphia Flyers as a head coach when he made the jump from the University of North Carolina to the National Hockey League, because you're taking over a team with, you know, players that have been in place for a long time, with players that are star players, and they're going to ask you how you plan to handle those egos and that kind of thing. And obviously, in interviewing for this job, it becomes much more of a philosophical, how do you intend to build the team? How do you intend to, coach these games and that sort of thing? And from what I got from Hakstol, and the reason I think it ended up being him, is that it seems like his philosophies and the kinds of players that he's looking for do align philosophically with the kinds of players that GM Ron Francis is looking to acquire. We actually joked about the fact that the players Ron Francis seems to be looking for are, in fact, Ron Francis back when he was playing. You know, smart, high IQ, tenacious, somewhat gritty players. So he has a sense of what the team is looking for, and I think it aligns his style and his outlook kind of aligns with where the Kraken are. But I got to tell you, you know, no doubt this was a shock. Like, Hakstol and I talked about this too, the fact that the first time we heard his name mentioned in conjunction with this job was the morning of his press conference. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, kudos to the Kraken and kudos to Dave Hakstol for keeping this thing under wraps, because honestly, when his name hit the radar screen, the first time it hit was the day that he was announced.
You know, and that's pretty crazy for us here in Seattle.
It's rare.
It's very rare in sports in general, but for you to feel that way and have that happen to you, I mean, it's pretty shocking. To your estimation, as you talked with him, as you're diving into this situation as to how he got the job, what was, you know, you mentioned him seeing the players the same way as GM Ron Francis, but what about his experience as a tremendous college coach running that program versus his experience, you know, coaching at the NHL level?
Yeah, I asked him about sort of what he's learned, and Hakstol is one of these guys that when you talk to him, you get a good sense of the fact that he's somebody who learns from his failures and dissects why things didn't work and understands maybe what needs to change the next time. And I think his time in Philadelphia, which, you know, failure might be a little harsh of a term. I mean, the team did make the playoffs a few times under Hakstol, but I think he terms it more as a failure to achieve the potential that they had as a team more than anything else. I think the thing he learned chiefly was better communication with players throughout the lineup, you know, and that's a real key for an expansion team. I mean, you're not coming into this thing with four or five guys that are going to be your voice in the room. You're not coming into this thing with four or five guys that are the stars that you build a team around, because you don't know anything about the team yet. So I think his overall purview of how to be a head coach changed not only from college to the Flyers or from the Flyers through Toronto as an assistant coach and now to the Kraken, that you really have to build relationships with everybody throughout the lineup. And when that happens, when you can attain that kind of cohesion, I think you end up having a better team.
Now, some important dates for Kraken fans to keep in mind. Obviously, there's the expansion draft on the 21st and then the NHL draft to follow in the days that follow. And the Kraken will know their pool of players to pick from in the expansion draft as early as this weekend, right, Greg? And is there any are there any stars on teams that, you know, a team may just not have enough spots to protect them and people are looking at, you know, any key big names as potentially being future Kraken players?
Well, we should definitely know by Sunday night what the protection lists are. The NHL, much like they did with Vegas, will send out those lists, and we'll have a complete sense of what the player pools might look like. You know, I think teams are always going to make room for their star players in the protection schemes, but it doesn't mean there aren't going to be high-quality players available in the expansion draft. But I was looking back at the way Vegas approached it in trying to get a sense of what we might see out of Seattle, and the way that the NHL has gamed the system for these expansion teams by having teams, in most cases, protect 7 forwards, 3 defensemen, and 1 goalie. They can switch it up and protect 8 skaters and 1 goalie if they want to protect a few more defensemen, let's say. The way they've gamed it is that you saw the Vegas Golden Knights draft a ton of defensemen because you're basically getting like the 4th best guy from each team, right? So I expect you're probably going to see the same thing with Seattle. And then the question then becomes, how many of them will they carry through into the season? How many of them do they immediately turn around and try to trade? Vegas, for example, made a few trades with defensemen before they played their first game. So I think it's going to be defenseman heavy. They're definitely going to find some quality goaltending. And then we're going to see what's out there at the forward spot. You know, if you remember with Vegas, although they did find some contributors to their forward position in the draft, it was mostly the trades that they made using the leverage of the draft to gain really good players up front, like Alex Tuch and Jonathan Marchessault, so Riley Smith, players like that. So that might be the best path for Seattle, is to try to use as much leverage as they can in this expansion draft to force teams to give them some good quality players up front.
Greg, I'm still trying to wrap my head around the process of the expansion draft. You know, as you build a team, you're able to go through the process. You're able to see what the pool is going to be. You're projecting it. And basically for the Kraken, it's like the Wild Wild West. You see the list. You got to make the selections in a finite amount of time, not very much time at all. How do you go through that and make it successful?
You start the process in January, which is kind of what's happened here for the Kraken. Ron Francis, I think, goes into this weekend with a pretty good sense of what players are going to be available, because you have to remember that a lot of the conversations he's been having with teams for the last few months have been about players that teams may be forced to leave unprotected, and how do we ensure that you guys don't take them and make those little side deals and all that stuff that happened in the Vegas draft. So although it's an expedited process at the expansion draft as far as like how much time they have to select these people, I think they have there's a giant whiteboard somewhere in Kraken headquarters with a bunch of names and arrows and strings and stuff, and they all know pretty well who might be on the board for them, and I think they'll be prepared to make those calls in real time at the expansion draft.
I just love that idea. There's a lot of conspiracy theory going
on. I like the idea of the red yarn.
We're trying to figure it all out, and we'll eventually find out here soon
enough.
But Greg, I know that obviously the NHL, it is very heavy, East Coast, Middle America, and you've got a few teams that have been successful. They've had their runs of success on the West Coast. But in terms of the Kraken and their impact on this league, what are you expecting out of this group that has brought the Seattle Kraken here to the NHL, here to Seattle? Are they going to be a marquee franchise, do you think?
Well, that comes with success, right? And so Vegas wouldn't be Vegas necessarily without moving to the conference final and at one point beyond it in their first three of the first 4 seasons, right? They've been able to really kind of gain a foothold in that market and be an absolute sensation. because of that early success. This ownership group's going to spend. They're going to spend a lot. It wouldn't shock me to see them potentially dabble in unrestricted free agency if there's somebody that their management group thinks could really help this team straight away. And I think Seattle is a very desirable place for a player to want to, you know, live and bring his family and set up shop for several years. What I expect out of the franchise. So one of the NHL's owners told me a few years ago when Seattle was deep into the expansion process and was going to get a franchise, that he expected this was going to be a top 10 revenue team, like within the first 2 years of its existence, like that it's going to be a massive financial success. So those are sort of some of the expectations happening within the league. But as far as attaining immediate success on the ice, remains to be seen. You know, the fact of the matter is that they are going to be placed in a Pacific division that is not insurmountable insofar as trying to make the playoffs if you're a competitive team right off the bat. I mean, you see the playoff space to Vegas, and then it's not exactly like concrete after that who is going to make the playoffs. So finding early success, I think, is possible. But obviously, a lot of it has to do with the stars aligning in the expansion draft, with the leverage that the team uses to get better players through trades. And if you remember Vegas, a lot of it tracks back to who's going to be in goal for you, because Marc-Andre Fleury was an MVP for them in their inaugural season. And you need really good goaltending, I think, to give a foundation and a base for whatever you're going to build for the rest of the team.
He is ESPN senior NHL writer Greg Wyshynski. You can get ready for the season by listening to his Puck Soup podcast. Greg, can we get you back on as we get closer to the season to help Kraken fans get ready here?
This was a lot of fun.
Anytime. I love talking about the Kraken. I seriously hope that everybody has fun watching the expansion draft. I was in Vegas for the expansion draft for them, and I got to tell you, like, you know, the formation of a new team and hearing what the guys have to say about, you know, putting on the Kraken sweater for the first time and stuff is a once-in-a-lifetime thing.
I mean, and
it's a really cool thing, and I'm excited for you guys next week.
Yeah, we're pumped, too. Greg, just so you know, you've just become an official friend of the show
of
Jake and Stacey. So we look forward to having you back, man. Thank you.
We're claiming you now.
Anytime.
Thanks, Greg. All right. That was ESPN senior NHL writer Greg Wyshynski. Before I jump into four down territory, an update here from ESPN's Adam Schefter on the Richard Sherman arrest, which we are tracking and giving you guys the latest updates. I'm just going to read the tweet verbatim. Richard Sherman's wife, Ashley Moss, told the Seattle Times, quote, "He didn't harm anybody. My kids were not harmed in the incident. He is a good person, and this is not in his character. We're doing all right, just trying to get him out. I want people to know no one was injured." So that is the latest on the Richard Sherman case. There is a press conference with Redmond police coming up at around 1:30 p.m. And we'll be keeping an eye on it to see if there are additional details. But the latest there from the Seattle Times and Adam Schefter. Also, stay tuned to 710 ESPN Seattle all day long as we're giving away Mariners tickets. So listen for the cue to call. You could win two tickets to the July 24th Mariners game at T-Mobile Park. It's the Mariners retro jersey night when the Mariners host Oakland, and the first 10,000 fans will score powder blue jerseys. Don't miss out. Get tickets today at mariners.com. And now it is time for Four Down Territory, brought to you by Genuine Auto Glass.
This is Four Down Territory, brought to you by Genuine Auto Glass.
With Jake and Stacy.
You live for moments like this. Time for us to step up and take it.
First Down, Jake, ESPN releasing their list of position groups across the NFL. Today's wide receivers, but DK Metcalf barely scraping his way into that top 10.
Disrespect.
Why do you think that is?
Well, at first, when I looked at this list, I thought, okay, I could see some arguments here. I mean, DK Metcalf had a phenomenal year. There's some guys like Keenan Allen who've been doing this a long time. Mike Evans, who's been doing this a long time, had their great years in their own right. Michael Thomas, who kind of fell off last year. This last season, but has been, you know, regarded as one of the best receivers before that time. Okay, I could see this potentially happening, and he's going to take that next leap the following year. But here's the line that killed me. Here's the line that just drives me nuts, okay? Metcalf got the fifth most total votes, okay? Meaning that a lot of people thought very, very highly of DK Metcalf. But a lot of evaluators recognize he's too elite to leave off their top 10 list. But he didn't crack some top 10s because of perceived limitations. So we're still running with this narrative that DK Metcalf can't run the route tree, that he can't run the entire route tree, and he's not going to be an elite receiver because of that. I think that is flat out ridiculous. What DK Metcalf did in from year one to year two was grow exponentially. How can you write this guy off? I mean, he was running routes that were very complex and very detailed for a big man that can run and fly down the field. And guess what? You don't need to run all the slot receiver routes for you to be one of the more dominant receivers in the NFL game. And this is what the Seahawks offense asked him to do from year one to year two. I'm excited to see what he's going to do in year three. But I thought that was one of the most ridiculous knocks on DK Metcalf that I saw from people. Still, that same narrative follows him from his pre-draft process, and people still haven't learned that. People still don't want to give that up in terms of him having a stiff lower body. He's not as fluid as some of these other guys. I think DK Metcalf is continuing to grow his game every single year, and holding him back in terms of ranking because of that is just flat out silly.
I hope there's still comments like he gets into the Hall of Fame and people are still like, but does he know the route?
A three cone drill, man.
It's unbelievable.
That three cone drill.
It's unbelievable.
A better Hall of Famer would run the three cone drill better.
Check it out.
Drives me crazy.
Stacy.
Yes.
Which Seahawks player finished outside of our top 15 list, but is also important to the 2021 campaign?
So this player was included in what Curtis calls my diaper list compared to his great list.
I think I speak for everyone when I call it the diaper list.
That's fine. I get it. So I think it's Rashad Penny. And I know that there are people saying, why would you include this as an important Seahawk? What are you doing? He hasn't done anything. He's a bust. I get it. I know what you're thinking. But the reason he's not in the top 15 is we found that there were 15 players that were more important to the season. But that doesn't mean that running back depth isn't still really important. I don't know what Penny's future holds with Seattle after this year. I do know that with a new offensive coordinator and with a running back who I don't think is injury prone, but who may miss a couple games due to injury just by the nature of the way he runs as a powerful downhill runner, it's going to help to be able to have some depth there and some safety there and a safety net for a new offensive coordinator. It would be wonderful if that person could be Rashad Penny. We'll see whether he finally takes off this year and is able to shake any kind of injuries and other things he's dealt with, but we'll see. Didn't make the list, but I think he's still going to be really important.
Third down. Jake, which Seahawks storyline are you most nervous about heading into training camp?
I don't think it's even close. It's the Jamal Adams extension talk. Have you heard anything? Have I missed something? Have you heard anything in regards to that? Of recent?
Jamal Adams.
No. Curtis, have you heard anything about that?
No.
I've been watching a lot of Love Island.
So it is dead quiet, dead silent. Now, it's not necessarily surprising at this current time. Everyone's away from the building. I mean, legitimately, Pete Carroll is one of the greatest coaches to coach under, to be around. That staff and everybody in that building, they are taking July off before they come to training camp. They value that time. They want everybody to get away. So they are not working. They are not doing business. But the fact that this has not been resolved and that they're not necessarily close on settling that deal makes me extremely nervous about Jamal Adams' contract extension talks and that it's going to bleed into training camp, not get settled day one of training camp. That would be my hope. That would be the nice surprise. But I am getting nervous because if it bleeds into training camp and Jamal Adams is not practicing with the team and this extends beyond just a couple days, a week, 2 weeks, this is going to have an effect on the team. How can it not? So that is the storyline that makes me the most nervous as we get really close, closer and closer and closer to training camp.
Fourth down. Jake, Russell Wilson interviewed by a couple of places. Let's start with the Ringer's Kevin Clark. What did Russ tell Clark that he said was the attribute he possesses that separates him from the rest?
Well, some might be surprised, some might not, but Russell Wilson said the thing that separates himself the most from other quarterbacks is his mentality. And there's a couple aspects of that that I want to get into. Number one is when you hear that, it initially talks about, okay, your mental thought process as you're going through plays, as you're going through adversity in games. And that's what Russell was referring to in this article, in this interview, about how he prepares his mind to handle adversity and how he gets in certain situations, like a two-minute drive, or that they're in the fourth quarter and they're down. I think that's always been a tremendous asset to Russell Wilson. Why you've seen so many comeback wins, why you've had so many great success stories over the last 10 years. But the other part that I'll give you a little inside ball on in terms of Russell, what he's wanted to work on heavily was not just the playbook, but really diving into situational football, really diving into, okay, I'm going to go through this play, I'm going to go through my system, and we're going to walk every scenario out in the offseason. And he has played the game, essentially, in his mind, thousands and thousands upon reps this offseason as he's trained, because he wants to mentally feel like, as I step on the field, I have been there, I'm prepared for it. I think he does that just as good as anybody else in the league.
Do you think he lays in bed and sees football plays play out on his ceiling like Beth Harmon in Queen's Gambit?
I would not be surprised if that is the case. I mean, he is. I think the one thing that people roll their eyes at that is very legitimate and very true is that for any of the talk or any of the extra attention that has been put on Russ because of his words, if anybody's saying, well, you need to make sure that you're doing your job, you need to make sure that you're taking care of business yourself, I can guarantee you that that's what he's been doing. He has been a madman getting himself in the best shape possible. I know he took a vacation into Italy, but he is in the best shape he has been in quite some time. He's worked extremely hard this offseason, and this past year, was a big moment for him for self-reflection, rejuvenation, and getting himself right to have a big monster year in 2021. So I'm really excited to see all that work get put onto the field.
All right, coming up at 12:45, another chance for you to win tickets to Mariners game on July 24th for Retro Jersey Night. And also first in the timeline at 12:30, Jalen Ramsey already trying to start stuff with the Seahawks, already talking trash. That's coming up next.
This is The Timeline
with Jake and Stacy,
brought to you by 1-800-DUIOA.
This hour of Jake and Stacy is brought to you by the Pro Club. It's The Timeline, reading you the top stories you're going to see in sports. Obviously, we've been covering the Richard Sherman story. We will give you updates as they become available. We've got some other bits of news here for The Timeline that are, let's start with this trash talking one. So everyone loves trash talk, right? Gets people riled up. Jalen Ramsey, a Rams cornerback, obviously.
Familiar with his work.
You've heard him before. You've heard the name. I am taking this as a shot. I'm taking it as a shot at the Seahawks and at Russell Wilson. This is how he says he prepares to face the Seahawks.
Like, grimy, like, you know what I mean? Like, say, safe, and I got nothing but respect for Russell and the Seahawks, nothing but respect for them. But say we play in Seattle, I'm going to listen to Future all week. And the DBs and the team, that's what we're going to listen to at practice, Future all week. It's just a mindset. Man, I really think, like, football is a competitive, vicious, like, sport, and I want to keep it that way.
Yeah.
And I want to get in that mindset of, like, yo, we really don't like, even if I know you, until this game over with, or I know the game is over with or out of hand, I don't like you. So I'm getting in a mindset where it's like, yo, you. Again, that's really how I feel.
It's going down.
It's going down. So whatever I can do to get me in that mindset and my teammates in that mindset.
What's the meanest that you've been to someone who was your friend but on another team?
Wow. Nothing to that effect.
But you have to be kind of competitive. You have to go out and forget in the moment that you're friendly or respect this
person. But respect to Russell Wilson, but I'm also going to think of the most disrespectful thing that I could do.
I think it's funny.
I get it, and I'm just saying that when you get in that mindset, I get it from Jalen Ramsey's perspective, what he's doing and his mindset that he's creating. It's just funny. It's like one of those things where it's like, with all due respect, and then you just like totally trash somebody to their face. This is obviously deeply personal to the, you know, Wilson family and everything that's been going down or that went down with their family and all that. But, I think from a player's mindset, even though you are friendly with them and now more than ever due to social media, due to, you know, training and being around each other more often than ever before, you still want to develop that competitive edge. And the one thing that I think Jalen Ramsey's talking about is sometimes in the league, it can be a little too buddy-buddy. It can be a little too friendly. And I think that, you know, from a competitive standpoint, adding that, you know, carrying that mentality is a big reason why that Rams defense was successful, is a big reason why, you know, the Legion of Boom was so successful, is they created something out of absolutely nothing. And they carried that edge with them every single week, mm-hmm. every single day. Richard Sherman, you know, was getting in fights, Twitter fights with Darrell Revis and anybody else that talked about how he wasn't the best corner in the game. So I just think these are ways that, you know, as Jalen Ramsey's talking about, just creating ways for him, as bizarre as they are, any kind of mental edge. And athletes, you know, across the board, you know, find unique ways to make that happen.
I do think that's probably good motivation. It depends. If you're someone that's not motivated by a potentially negative thought, then this isn't going to help you. But I think even outside of sports, it can sometimes help to just say, hey, people don't think you can do this, or people don't think you're the best, or what have you. Like, I completely understand the mindset.
I do, but I just think also it's a little bit of trash when you're you're attacking somebody's personal life. And it's not just like something that you can, you know, easily make fun of. Like, this is deeply personal. There's a lot of extra stuff behind the scenes that are going on with kids, with parents. Like, I think that that is a little out of bounds when it comes to Jalen Ramsey. But I get from a mental perspective, he's trying to create a mindset and he's trying to establish a tough guy culture. But I think it's a weird way to go about it.
A weird stat to come out of the Home Run Derby. Pete Alonso, winner in back-to-back years, has won more in Home Run Derby prize money, $2 million, than what he's earned with the Mets over the course of his career, $1.47
million. $1.7
million? So he's earned $1.47 million over the course of his career so far with the Mets, and he's earned $2 million, separate from that, as $2 million from Home Run Derby prize money.
So I heard you guys talking about this. You and Salk and Curtis talking about this. Didn't get to, you know, talk with you guys about the Home Run Derby. This is why Pete Alonso is so different from everybody else.
He took it so seriously.
Yes. Yeah. This is his way to get paid.
It's more than a year's worth salary
yes.
for him.
So if you're in the same position, if you're Pete Alonso, are you out there trying to be buddies and be friends
with
everybody?
No, absolutely not. I'm like, sorry, Trey Mancini. I know everyone's rooting for you, but
yes.
I got
food on
this.
My table.
Yes. Yeah. And I'm sorry if you think I'm annoying because I'm taking this seriously, but I am getting bread out of this. I'm getting straight up money out of this, and I am going to take this as seriously as I need to. I mean, he just doubled his salary.
Were people actually annoyed with Pete Alonso? Because watching it, I didn't get the feeling he was like, he was still having fun. He just wasn't like laughing and smiling, but he looked like he was bopping his head to music.
He was bopping his head to music, but it was different. I mean,
he was in the zone.
Like, he was, you know, I mean, he was as serious, I think, as you can get in that situation, but it wasn't to the point where he was like stone faced and,
right,
you know,
trash talking.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't quite like that. So you could still have fun. You felt like you could still have fun with him. But, I mean, I would be taking it the same exact way. If I had the opportunity, we were going to the bowling alley or we were going to go play whatever game, and I could actually double my salary by playing
right,
that way.
Yes, absolutely.
Woo.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sorry, but
I'm playing dirty.
Yes.
I'm wearing that
absolutely.
Brace. I'm bringing my own ball, my own shoes.
I'm putting pine tar on my bat.
100%. And we're
taking
not
steroids.
And guess what? We're friends right now, but we wouldn't
it's
be friends
over.
In the moment.
Absolutely not. It's game over in the moment. Angels took an interesting approach to the MLB draft. If you saw Angels trending, it could have been for a lot of reasons. Shohei Ohtani, obviously one of them, but it might have been for this. The Angels used all 20 of their MLB draft picks on pitchers. Every single pick on a pitcher.
Well, when you struggle like you do with your pitching
yeah,
staff.
They need it.
Look,
want literal just as many bites
we
of the
we are
apple.
Gonna take 20 chances and a couple of these guys gotta hit. Like, it's just the numbers of it. It's gotta work to our advantage. I mean, that to me is exactly what happened here. Like, we know that all these guys aren't gonna pan out, but maybe 1, 2, 3, 4, if we get lucky, are actually going to turn into something for us. So they're just throwing noodles at a wall and seeing what sticks.
I like this for 805. The meanest thing Jake does to his frenemies is put an ugly postage stamp on their Christmas cards. Sticking it to them. Jake, you're too nice.
I'm sorry. I I just don't think I need to do all the extra stuff to give myself a mental edge.
My old coworker couldn't stand this one guy that we worked with who just never put in any effort, never tried. And she really wanted to tell him off when he left on his last day.
Uh-huh.
And she came in and she was like, I shook his hand and I said, best of luck. Good luck in the future. And I was like, what?
And she was bragging about that? Like she just told him
like
off?
I let him know. Like I really stared into his eyes.
Right.
And I was like, I don't think he knows right. or cares.
This reminds me. So I was down in Royal City. Okay. So was out of camp the last 2 days. There, we were coaching the high school kids and in the youth program. There was a kid, okay, you'll love this, Curtis. There was a kid, he's about 10 years old, and after the camp, both days, he came up to all of us coaches, went to go shake our hands, stared us in the eye, and tried to shake our hands as hard as he possibly
yeah.
could. And, like, he wasn't trying to hide it with his face
he's
either.
He's the alpha
like,
now.
Bone yeah. crusher, yeah. trying to show us who the alpha is. It was hilarious, but that's exactly what that reminds me of.
All right, your chance to win Mariners tickets. It's coming up next. Don't go anywhere.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
All right, this hour of Jake and Stacey is brought to you by the Pro Club. Coming up in 15 minutes, we get things started with our most important Seahawks countdown to training camp. I'm not going to tell you who we're going to start with other than we're starting at number 15. So I feel like that is the best tease I can offer.
It's going to be great.
No spoilers. Oh, no, I do have a tease. This was a very controversial selection, and we ended up swapping this player with another player higher on the list. And it was quite a debate.
Okay.
All right. That's a much better tease.
Yeah, I would agree.
All-Star Week reminded us how many exciting young superstars there are in baseball right now. Who are we thinking can be the Mariners' next superstar? And I don't just want to stop at that question, because we all know the answer will probably be Jared Kelnick or Julio Rodriguez. But I want to move it forward and say, well, what else do you need? We've seen teams that haven't been able to win consistently with huge superstars, the Angels with Shohei Ohtani and Mike Trout. So what are the other pieces that you need, right? I mean, there were representatives at the Home Run Derby on losing teams.
There were, and I think that when you look at the Mariners and you look at the All-Star game, it was really fun to see some of these young superstars. You see Fernando Tatis, you see Guerrero Jr., you know, he wins the MVP of the All-Star game. You look at, you know, a lot of these young superstars that are out there in Major League Baseball right now. One, it's exciting for baseball, but two, has you a little envious. And as I'm watching the Mariners and as I'm looking at them and their future projections and their hopes and dreams through this rebuilding process, you have to have superstars. Not just one, you need multiple. And what the Mariners organization promises as of right now is that they do have those guys in their farm system. They have those guys that are coming up. Jared Kelnick, we got a snapshot of him. It wasn't the greatest debut we've ever seen, but we're hopeful that we continue to see him improve in the second half of the season. You have Julio Rodriguez. You have Logan Gilbert, who is coming up. Now, Logan Gilbert wasn't pegged as a superstar. He was pegged as a really good piece to your starting rotation, and maybe he exceeds expectations, and he does become that star in your starting rotation. But those two guys in particular, Julio Rodriguez, Jared Kelnick, you look farther down the list in terms of the next wave, maybe Noel Marte, who's performing really well in the farm system right now, could be another guy. But you have to have those guys, superstars under club control, as you look at all the traditional ways through a rebuild that teams are successful. It comes from those guys, and that's what makes me kind of anxious through the process, is that I love the culture that they're building right now, the winning that they're doing, but we all agree that they don't have the staying power to make a serious, legitimate run at the playoffs as of right now without some help to this roster.
I was reading Jim Bowden's feature on the 2021 MLB Futures game, just the prospects that stood out. I just want to read this one section. Coming into the game, the headliner for me was the tandem of outfielders Jared Kelnick and Julio Rodriguez, the future core of the Seattle Mariners. One of the best debates among prospect watchers is which one of the pair is better. My conclusion, Kelnick is a sure thing who profiles as a 300-type hitter with the potential for 25 home runs and stolen bases, while Rodriguez has more upside with a chance to hit 40 homers but comes with more risk. And then he detailed what some of those risks are. I guess what I was thinking when I was watching, whether it be everyone at the Home Run Derby, even guys who weren't participating but who were featured and shown a lot, like Fernando Tatis, or guys at the All-Star Game, was just, I just like kind of jealously want Seattle to have a star. Like, I just want the Mariners to have a superstar. Do you remember when that list came out on ESPN of the top draft picks, the last best draft pick by a Mariners team, and they had A-Rod? Was it Alex Rodriguez in 93?
It was Dave Schoenfeld who wrote the column, and it was looking at the last superstar player that each team has drafted. And while you would consider Kyle Seager to be the best draft pick of the last like 20 years the Mariners have had, I don't necessarily think people would call Kyle Seager a superstar.
Yeah, we're talking transcends your team, what is normally a very regional sport already, transcends your team, where people might consider, you know what, I'll watch this Angels game. The Mariners aren't playing, but I'll tune in to watch the Angels and, I don't even know, Dodgers.
Well, and Alex Rodriguez was deemed a can't-miss prospect and turned out to be the case. Like, that was a no-brainer pick when it was made.
Right.
And but it's still a long time ago. Jake wasn't even born yet.
Yes, I was. Okay,
Stacey,
don't spread misinformation.
Back then.
No, she wasn't. She was farther along than that. She
was 1993.
She was rearing her children at that point in time.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Look, Alex Rodriguez, 1993. That's the last transcendent talent that you've had that you've drafted within your system that you've grown in your system that's played up with your club. That's a long time, and this organization as of right now holds that promise. And how important, how key, how pivotal is that if you're able to place, I mean, think about it. If you're able to place two superstars on this roster currently, they're a playoff team. Mm-hmm. They are a playoff team with what they're doing right now. Now, do they need to add some more starting pitching? Do they need to trade for that? Yes, absolutely. But if you add two superstars to this lineup, that makes a massive difference for this team. And for them to take that next step and become that contender, you're going to have that. And the exciting thing is that, at least from a personality standpoint, Julio Rodriguez, Jared Kelnick, they have that in spades to be that transcendent superstar talent. The question remains, are they going to develop into that player on the field? Are they going to come up big in these moments? Are they going to provide, you know, big pop, big power at the plate, and add that spark to this organization that they're hoping that they will be from a leadership standpoint to production on the field? That is a huge piece that is missing to this rebuilding process that they are planning on adding that will be here, and we'll see Jared Kelnick here very soon, and hopefully he developed and you know, grew during his time being sent down AAA and has a better experience up at the big league level here in the second half of the season. That part's going to be pivotal to this process as well.
I do think that's why those smaller pieces are important too. This team will make some moves that don't blow people away. And that's to be expected. But also, you need more than just the superstar or two to make your team. You don't want to waste your window of talent with a transcendent type talent. We don't know if Kelnick or Julio are going to be those guys. But if they are, you've got to have some pieces around them to help out too. And we're also going to be watching for that and watching for those moves. We want to send you, speaking of the Mariners, to the July 24th Mariners game. So in 1 minute, if you're listening on the radio, or 30 seconds, if you're listening on the stream, I want you to call 206-421-3776 or 866-979-3776. Caller number, you gotta pick a number.
Caller number three.
Caller number three. I just wanted you to be able to choose it that
Okay,
time.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Good try.
Yeah, thanks for keeping me involved.
Caller number three will win two tickets to the Mariners retro jersey night on July 24th, and we're giving away a pair of Mariners tickets each hour today, so stay tuned to 710 ESPN Seattle for your next chance to win. Coming up next, we are starting our most important Seahawks countdown series at number 15.